Tena Pinedo versus Commonwealth. Bernadette M. Donovan, Appellants Counsel, Leanna C. Minix, Assistant Attorney General, Appellees Counsel. Chief Justice, both counsel are present and appear ready to argue.
All right. Call the case again.
Tena Pinedo versus Commonwealth. Bernadette M. Donovan, Appellants Counsel, Leanna C. Minix, Assistant Attorney General, Appellees Counsel.
All right. Ms. Donovan, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, Bernadette Donovan on behalf of Olmedo Tena Pinedo. I would like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. At heart, this case is about respecting the role of jury and criminal intent. In Virginia, not every homicide is a first-degree murder. Rather, like most jurisdictions, we have a gradated form of homicide system in which we recognize varying levels of culpability. Those levels of culpability depend largely upon mental state. And in most homicide cases, mental state or intent is a critical issue for the jury to determine. And I say jury because, as this court has repeatedly recognized, it is typically the role of the fact finder to determine intent and whether the required intent exists to find that the Commonwealth has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty of the offense. But there's a good reason for that, which is that, as this court has also recognized, intent is typically proven by circumstances and not by direct evidence. Now, in this case, Mr. Tena Pinedo was not charged with first-degree premeditated murder. There was no allegation of a willful, deliberate, premeditated homicide. Rather, he was charged with first-degree felony murder. And for felony murder, of course, the requisite mental state of malice is provided by the underlying felony, which in this case is charged as a robbery. Thus, to find Mr. Tena Pinedo guilty of felony murder, robbery, conspiracy to commit robbery, and use of a firearm in the commission of a robbery, the jury had to also find beyond a reasonable doubt that he had the specific intent to commit the robbery. That is, the Commonwealth had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Pena intended to feloniously deprive the owner permanently of his property. Mr. Pena's defense was a claim of right defense, which is long recognized in Virginia and is recognized in at least 46 other jurisdictions in our nation. The claim of right defense
we're talking about retaking the proceeds of illegal transactions?
Yes, Your Honor. The answer is it depends on the specific circumstances of the case, as it does with most intent issues. And in this case, the Court of Appeals incorrectly drew a bright line rule that Mr. Pena could not assert a claim of right because drug proceeds were involved. And the Court of Appeals erred in making that determination for three major reasons. The first is that it misapprehends the fundamental nature of the defense. The defense does not assert that Mr. Pena had an actual legal right to the property. That is, it is not a defense to the property element of robbery. It is only a defense to the mental state element. And the case law makes clear that a person can be mistaken. A person's belief in their right to the property can be even unreasonable, so long as it is sincere and genuine. I think part of where the issue in this case lies is the language of good faith. But if we look at Black's Law Dictionary, good faith just means actual, genuine, and not feigned. Additionally, the definition that the Commonwealth has offered for good faith is consistent with that. By the Commonwealth's definition, good faith means sincerity and means what someone subjectively believes. So what we're talking about is what Mr. Pena's subjective belief was.
In this case, can I interrupt you there? So the expression good faith in the common law, and this is a common law expression, and robbery is a common law crime, the expression good faith just means you're just being open, you're being authentic, you're being sincere. Can't you have bad faith and own it? and be open and authentic and sincere? Is that what the law is talking about?
I think good faith goes to sincerity and genuineness and actualness of whether you believed you had a right in this property. So to draw a specific contrast, this court in both Groves and Pierce said that in those cases, the court could find that essentially those were both bench trials. And in both cases, the judge found that there was not a claim of right. And as this court held, that's because a claim of right has to be genuine as opposed to feigned. It cannot be a pretense for a theft. So yes, I do believe that the term good faith in this context goes to what was the actual genuine intent formed in the mind of the defendant at the time of the crime. It can be mistaken, it can be unreasonable, but it can't be pretextual. And in this case, there was ample evidence that Mr. Pena's actual intent was to recover his own money. In fact, the Commonwealth made that clear from their opening statement and has conceded as much repeatedly in its briefing in this case. There was,
but it's not his own money. It's money, it's contraband money. And his ownership interest doesn't qualify as a good faith interest. It may qualify as a sincerely held belief that he's entitled to it, but that's not the common law. That may be the law of criminals, but that's not the way the common law works.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I disagree. Intent is the crucial issue here. And what Mr. Pena genuinely and actually believed is what determines whether there was good faith. The question isn't, did he have a property right? Did he have a property right in contraband? The question is whether he actually genuinely believed that this was his money. And that was an issue for the jury in this case because there was ample evidence in support of his subjective belief. I would draw a contrast with the cases cited by the Commonwealth out of California, People v. Gates and People v. Hendricks. In both of those cases, you have defendants who were engaged in debt collection for notoriously illegal activities. In Gates, it was a forgery ring, and in Hendricks, it was a prostitution ring. In both of those cases, the defendants admittedly were collecting debts for illegal businesses that they knew was illegal. I think in those cases, a court could properly find that this is not a jury question. But in this case, what you have isn't Mr. Pena going to collect a drug debt from Mr. Amani. What you have is currency, commingled currency that was in Mr. Pena's home that someone came to his home under false pretenses and stole. And Mr. Pena's intent was simply to recoup that money. I think the jury could reject the sincerity of Mr. Pena's belief, but ultimately it's a jury question. And both this court's jurisprudence and the Virginia Court of Appeals jurisprudence is quite clear that where there's more than a scintilla of evidence to support the defendant's theory of defense, he has a right to have the jury instructed on it. And in this case, there would be no way for the jury to know about the claim of right defense if they weren't instructed on it.
Counsel, this is Justice Chafin. Also, your client took marijuana. Are you alleging that he had a claim of right for the marijuana as well?
No, Your Honor, I don't agree that my client took marijuana. I think that that is a jury issue. There was disputed testimony on that, and where the evidence is in conflict and where different conclusions could be drawn by reasonable people, then that's also a jury issue. So in this case, only one person, which was Tiffany Bowman, testified to seeing Mr. Amani hand marijuana to Mr. Pena. Mr. Lafferty testified that he assumed some marijuana was retrieved, but neither Mr. Pouncey nor Mr. Pulliam testified to any marijuana. And the Commonwealth specifically stated in opening that Mr. Pena retrieved money and that marijuana was found in the car. Which additionally, if this was set up as a drug deal, there was a package of marijuana found in the passenger compartment right next to where Mr. Amani was sitting. So that would also contradict the assertion that Mr. Amani had handed his marijuana over to Mr. Pena. I want to return to the distinction between illegal debt collection cases and a good faith claim of right in this context, because I think that's probably the most critical issue in this case. I mentioned earlier People v. Gates and People v. Hendricks and how the bright line in those cases varies from the evidence in this case. But I think if one is to look at the California cases, one should also consider People v. Tufunga, which was about 10 years later in California, in which the California Supreme Court held that claim of right is still a defense to robbery in the state of California. And in that case, the defendant actually retrieved money that he had handed over to another person and asserted a claim of right defense for retrieving that money. And what the Supreme Court of California said in that case is, even if there are policy disagreements with this rule, the rule essentially, there are two problems with that. One is that this law very rarely applies. And two is what must be recognized is that someone who is not guilty of an offense based on a claim of right doesn't go home. They are not acquitted. They are going to be charged with and found guilty of other offenses. So, for example, in Mr. Pena's case, had the jury found that he had properly asserted a claim of right, which in other words simply means that the Commonwealth had failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he had the specific intent required for robbery, they then simply would have wrestled with whether he was guilty of second-degree murder or involuntary manslaughter. The critical distinction between those would have been whether they accepted the evidence that was set forth by the Commonwealth that Mr. Pena had actually killed Mr. Amani by accident. If they believed it was an accident, they would have convicted him of involuntary manslaughter. But if they believed it wasn't, he would have been convicted of second-degree murder, and he would have received a sentence of up to 40 years. So this is
counsel. Could you address the Commonwealth cites some persuasive authority? The Court of Appeals in this case obviously addressed this. I'm not aware that we've squarely addressed this scenario. So we look to persuasive authority for, you know, what wisdom has been developed in other courts. And it seems pretty lopsided against your position, but I want to give you a chance to address that. Is that wrong? And where did those courts go astray?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for the opportunity to address that. I disagree that it's lopsided. I don't think there's a case on all fours with this one anywhere in the country. I have researched this issue throughout the country, and there are no courts that have decided one in this context. The few cases that the Commonwealth is relying on are all cases of illegal debt collection. Those are cases in which, for example, the California cases, in which the defendant admitted that he knew that he was collecting a debt for a notoriously illegal business, and that he knew that his involvement was illegal. So that belies the sincerity and the genuineness of his intent. Whereas in this case, there was no such evidence that Mr. Pena knew that he was, you know, acting on contraband or attempting to do something illegal. In his mind, the evidence was that he was attempting to recover his own money. So there's simply not a case like this out there. The only perhaps other similar case is the one out of Michigan, in which the defendant was also attempting to collect a drug debt. So I think in terms of persuasive authority, if the court looks to the actual facts and analysis of the cases, each of them is an illegal debt collection case and not a case such as this one. And with that, I would like my remaining time for rebuttal, if I may.
1 minute, 40 seconds.
Thank you.
Ms. Mannix, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Leanna Mannix on behalf of the Commonwealth in this matter. The circuit court did not err when it denied Pena's claim of right jury instruction. And this court should rule that as a matter of law, Pena could not have a good faith belief in his legal right to reclaim that property because the evidence at trial established, and it was uncontradicted, that the source of that money was Pena's own sales for illegal drugs. First, good faith requires the defendant to make a showing of more than just subjective intent. And by definition, one cannot have a good faith belief in a legal right to recover property that he knows is illegal. And of course, the affirmative defense and the good faith language comes from, I would point to Butts and Pierce and Groves. And so based on those cases, I would submit that good faith is a measure of subjective intent. And it, the affirmative defense does not require the defendant to have a completely objectively reasonable belief or that he be factually correct. However, it can also not be detached from reality. And for that reason, a defendant could not be willfully ignorant of the circumstances. And so while good faith, sincere, and bona fide are used interchangeably in the claim of right jurisprudence, subjective intent is not. And I would point out that it was not used in this instruction. So just having a subjective belief is not enough to have a good faith belief. Any belief might be subjective, but the defendant has to show that his belief was held in good faith. And these are not the same concepts. I would also point out that this does go to intent, because by putting on this affirmative defense to negate his intent to steal, the defendant's knowledge is at issue. And so his knowledge of the illegal nature of his property does go to his good faith. The Commonwealth's position is consistent with the authorities, persuasive authorities cited on brief. And I would like to touch on the fact that I think that the difference between the illegal debts that were being collected in some of these cases, starting with the Gates case from California Supreme Court, and the fact that this was, I believe the Court of Appeals properly characterized it as derivative contraband, that distinction is not at issue here. And that is because these cases that the Commonwealth has cited were relying on the illegal nature of that debt. And so while other courts have chosen to distinguish between debt collection and personal property, the ruling in Butts did not. There, the defendant was attempting to collect lawful wages. And so the distinction here is not the difference between debt and property. The issue here is the illegal nature of that property or debt. Similarly, I would point out that for this reason, the Commonwealth's position is already inherent in the definition of good faith. The Commonwealth's position is also consistent with existing Virginia law, which is that a party cannot use his own illegal conduct as a defense or a ground for recovery. And similarly, the courts will not enforce illegal contracts. And so this court should not ignore the implications of ruling that a defendant could make a good faith showing as to a possessory interest in contraband. And I would point to the opinions specifically in the Morant and Lewis cases from the Connecticut Supreme Court. Those cases were dealing with the sufficiency of the evidence. And in those cases, the defendant had asserted, he and his co-defendant, those are companion cases essentially, that they were attempting to recover drugs and drug money. And that because the property was his, he was attempting to negate his intent. And so the court did not address this in the sense of the affirmative defense, but it did rule that an individual does not have a possessory interest in contraband. And so I would point to the language from Morant that to hold a person may use violence to recover contraband would essentially be to give a stamp of approval to an act of completion of which is in itself a criminal offense. So moving on to the next point of this argument, I would point out there is no evidence offered at trial to contradict the source of the money, even considering the evidence and the inferences in the light favorable to Pena. And I would point to Lafferty's testimony, which was uncontradicted that the source of the money was drug proceeds and was also corroborated and consistent by TV's testimony. As this court noted in Butts, usually the question of bona fides is one for the jury, but where the facts are undisputed, it is a matter of law for the court. And I would submit here that was the case. And I would further point out that the circuit court's findings that this was contraband are supported by the testimony at trial. The jury's ability to reject evidence is insufficient to rise to more than a scintilla to entitle the defendant to this instruction. And I believe the cases the Commonwealth cited on brief support that proposition. And so the defendant was not entitled to the jury instruction as a matter of law. And the jury could not have differed in concluding that this was, the evidence at issue was contraband. And so I would like to point out that Pena, to allow Pena to argue now that essentially having, I believed I could get my money back, that was my good faith belief. Allowing him to just argue that would be essentially eliminating the good faith belief, because it would only be based on his subjective intent. And so this was not just an unreasonable belief. This is internally inconsistent to the point of impossibility to let him claim that he had a good faith belief in a legal right to recover property that he knew was illegal. And so for that reason, again, I would point out that I believe the Commonwealth's position is consistent with the law from those other courts cited on brief. And again, the difference between illegal debts and personal property is not the real issue before this court. It is the illegal nature of the property itself. And finally, I would like to address the point made on brief about this being an ex post facto violation, because it is within the purview of this court to interpret the common law. And I would point to the Rogers case, which is a case from the Supreme Court of the United States, to support that that position. And I would submit that this interpretation is already inherent in the definition of good faith. And this court is just asked to apply the existing rule to a new fact pattern, and that is within the purview of this court. And so for those reasons, just the two parts of the Commonwealth's argument, as a matter of law, Pena could not form that good faith belief based on his knowledge about the underlying property. And secondly, that he was not entitled to the instruction at trial based on the evidence that was submitted, that was elicited at trial, and which very clearly established that illegal source. If there are no questions about the first part of the Commonwealth's argument, I'm happy to turn to the second part, which is that the circuit court did not err when it denied the instruction because there was not more than a scintilla of proof that Pena had, or excuse me, that Imani had the money at the time of the robbery. And I would again just point out, for all the reasons argued on brief, that Pena had targeted, that he had targeted TB. And that Lafferty's testimony is not able to be just imputed to Pena without any evidence to support that they had shared all of Lafferty's beliefs. And so because Pena did not testify at trial, the court had to consider what other evidence there was. And he failed to show more than a scintilla of evidence at trial that he believed at the time of the robbery that Mr. Imani had his money. And finally, I'm happy to address any questions about the harmless error analysis, but I'm also happy to rest on my brief as to that argument. If the court has no questions for me about the Commonwealth's position that Pena was not entitled to this instruction as a matter of law, based on the illegal nature of the property that he knew of and that he sought to recover, then I would ask that this court affirm the ruling of the trial court and that this court affirm the ruling of the Court of Appeals and find that he was not entitled to this instruction. Thank you.
Any questions from the court? All right, thank you very much. Ms. Donovan, you have 1 minute and 40 seconds remaining for rebuttal.
Facts matter. And in this case, the facts are entirely different from those cases in which defendants have presented evidence that they knew that they were collecting debts for notoriously illegal activities. In this case, the Commonwealth did present evidence that the money stolen from Pena's home was drug proceeds. But what they didn't present was any evidence that Mr. Pena knew that these were drug proceeds, or that they were entirely drug proceeds, or that his intent at the time was to recover drug proceeds knowing that he was acting in on behalf of an illegal business. And why does that matter? That matters because the question and claim of right is about intent. The Commonwealth is relying on Connecticut cases and spent a good deal of argument on that, but those cases are not claim of right cases. Those cases go to the property element. That's a different issue in Connecticut.
Here in Virginia, this is Justice Kelsey. May I ask you a brief hypothetical? Two guys go into a bank and rob it. Before they go into the bank and rob it, they decide we'll split the loot 50-50. They come out, one guy has the money, and then he runs off. And the next day, the other guy puts a gun to his head and said, give me my half, and he gets it from him. Is that a robbery?
I think that depends on the evidence of what his intent was in that moment.
Well, suppose his intent was, you promised me half of the money, and you're not giving it to me. There's the debt collection, and I'm the creditor, so pay up. And he puts a gun to his head and said, give me my half of the bank robbery money. Is that a robbery? Or is that a justified claim of right?
Again, I think that the case law distinguishes between debt collection and recouping money that has been taken from you.
Okay,
and
well, is that a robbery? As you understand the law, is my hypothetical a robbery or is it a justified claim of right?
As I understand the law, it depends entirely on the facts as they prove that gentleman's intent. And the court might not be happy with that answer, but the fact is we rely on juries every day to determine
based on facts. Suppose the gentleman's intent is concededly to get his half of the money that they just stole the day before from the bank. Suppose he admits that was my intent and I thought I had a right to it. Would that be a robbery?
No, that's not a robbery. It's an assault.
All right. Well, your time has expired. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.